Israeli forces kill yet another Palestinian during a raid in the north of the occupied West Bank. Passengers in London are facing disruptions as tube and bus workers stage walkouts over pay and work conditions. And as the presidential election nears in Brazil, opinion polls show former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva maintaining a significant lead over incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Israelis have killed yet another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank, bringing to two the number of people killed in the past 24 hours. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, at least the latest victim is a 58-year-old man from the city of Tubas in the northeast of the West Bank. It says that he died of critical wounds sustained by live bullets in the head. The Israeli military says that the man was among the several people throwing stones at soldiers during a raid in Tubas. The city's mayor, however, says the man was unarmed and leaving a mosque when he was shot. On Thursday, Israeli forces killed a young Palestinian man during a raid in Nablus. The regime has intensified its attacks in the occupied territories over the past months, killing dozens and making mass arrests. Palestine's foreign ministry has strongly condemned the Thursday Israeli raid on offices of several Palestinian NGOs in the occupied West Bank. The ministry, in a statement, called the raid unlawful. It said Israeli forces looted documents and seized equipment at the offices before shutting them down. The offices belong to Palestinian human rights groups and civil society organizations. The foreign ministry warned that civil society and human rights defenders remain as the prime target of the apartheid Israeli regime. That is because the ministry said they play a key role in monitoring and documenting Israeli crimes against Palestinian people. It called on the international community to provide urgent protection for the groups targeted on Thursday. Professor of Political Science Saad Nimr says Israel takes every possible measure to prevent documentation of its atrocities against Palestinians.
In reality, the Israeli are insisting on showing the nature of this kind of entity, this state, or whatever you can call it, which is an apartheid state, a racist state, and it built on hatred and on against everyone else rather than the Jews. And what was going on that they don't want any kind of Palestinian reaction or even documentation to their atrocities, especially that in the last years there was a huge escalation against the Palestinian people on all levels, not only by the Israeli army but also by the settlers, by the government, and by the state institutions against the Palestinians in everywhere and in all levels. So the Palestinian NGOs, and especially the human rights NGOs, they are documenting these atrocities and documenting everything that the Israeli are doing against our people. At the same time, these organizations are highly liked, if you like, or they are highly appreciated worldwide for their accuracy and for their transparency in moving and giving the truth about what's going on.
The U.S. has for decades been following an erroneous and failed policy regarding Iran and violating the legitimate rights of the Iranian nation, but it is now ready to change and tract. That is the question asked by the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani in a tweet on the occasion of the anniversary of the 1953 U.S.-led coup in Iran. It saw the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. Kanani said the U.S. is the world record holder in meddling and staging coups and military attacks against independent states. He says the 1953 coup is an example of this dark U.S. history. The comments come amid indirect talks between Tehran and Washington to revive the 2015 deal. Earlier this week, Iran provided its written response to the most recent EU proposal to salvage the pact. Tehran says it is now Washington's turn to show flexibility and take a realistic approach if it really wants a final agreement. The U.S. sent the deal into limbo after unilaterally pulling out of it in 2018. A delegation from Iran headed by the country's Minister for Roads and Urban Development, Rustam Qasemi, has visited Pakistan. During the visit, the two countries agreed to finalize a free trade agreement within the next 6 months. Nasser Kazmi reports.
Iranian Minister for Roads and Urban Development, Rustam Qasemi, along with the delegation of 57 dignitaries from Iran, visited Islamabad on the sidelines of 21st session of Pak-Iran Joint Economic Commission. During the two-day visit, the Iranian delegation met Pakistan's Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari and discussed the bilateral ties between the two countries. Pakistan's Foreign Minister underlined the need to fully utilize the existing potential between Islamabad and Tehran in energy and air links. Addressing a press conference with the Iranian Roads and Urban Development Minister, Pakistan's Minister for Commerce Naveed Qamar said, both sides have agreed to start negotiations on transit agreements that will allow the movement of goods without any additional taxes or tariffs.
We agreed on time frames for the PTA, which is to be negotiated between the two countries. And an ambitious target of 6 months has been set for that process.
The visiting Iranian minister, Rustam Qasemi, said, the 21st session of Pakistan-Iran Joint Economic Commission offers new avenues for expanding bilateral ties between Pakistan and Iran. He noted, in order to increase bilateral trade, both sides are ready to establish border markets, which will later be made free economic zones to enable investors of both countries to set up their industries for import and export purposes.
I believe that the implementation of these agreements will play a significant role in raising the quality of life of the people of the two sides, especially the border markets, transportation, and the exchange of goods between the two countries.
Islamabad has assured Tehran that it is committed to taking all possible measures to increase bilateral trade volume to the level of $5 billion in near future.
Besides signing different MOUs in the fields of transport, trade, and business, both Pakistan and Iran also stressed the need of making visa conditions easier to facilitate the traders and visitors from both sides. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
Londoners are facing problems getting around the city as a major strike has crippled public transport in the UK capital. Tube and bus workers have staged separate walkouts over pay and work conditions. All underground and overground train lines are suspended or partly suspended. Bus routes have been disrupted in the west of London, too. Also on Thursday, passengers across the UK experience travel misery as rail network staff walk out. They plan another strike on Saturday. Teachers, lawyers, nurses, postal staff, as well as aviation workers are planning future strikes as well. All of them want higher pay to cope with inflation, which is at a 10.1%. That is the highest in 40 years. The government is worried that an increase in wages could push up prices further.
Another mass walkout bringing the UK's railway network to a grinding halt, causing major disruptions. Tens of thousands of signalers, maintenance workers, ticket collectors fighting for their rights as negotiations with the government for better pay and conditions hit the buffers.
I support the workers that are striking.
We're being inconvenienced, but they're being treated unequally.
Many rail employees, often working unsocial hours in a high-pressure environment, say they have seen no pay rise in 3 years. As the specter of soaring inflation, predicted to surpass 13% over the next year, looms over negotiations. The Conservative government has offered a below-inflation pay rise and accuses the unions organizing the strikes of taking the country for ransom. Despite that, public support for the strikes is on the rise. Stoking the public ire, comments by Conservative Prime Ministerial hopeful Liz Truss, who has pledged to restrict the ability of public sector workers to strike.
Liz Truss is seeking to take away human rights and the ability of the democratic right of people to express themselves through their trade unions and industrial action, which is one of the pillars of our democracy. It's only repressive regimes that stop people going on strike and stop them expressing themselves and stop them rebalancing the power in the workplace through their trade unions.
The opposition Labour Party, which receives funding from several trade unions itself, has also come under fire for failing to support the walkouts. The rail strikes, which also include London's underground and overground network, have set off a wave of industrial action that is set to get bigger, with teachers, health workers, and even barristers planning their own strikes.
Britain's so-called summer of discontent seems well underway, with a general strike more likely now than ever before, and with the railway workers in the eye of the storm. Saipur is up, London.
To Ukraine now with the latest developments for the war there. Ukrainian officials have reported more strikes by Russia, which they say have hit northeastern city of Kharkiv. The officials say at least one person was killed in strikes early on Friday. A day earlier, they also reported 17 deaths in the Russian strikes in Kharkiv. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian military said it has repelled Russian attacks on multiple fronts. Another focal point of fighting is the nuclear power plant southeast of Ukraine. The two sides have accused each other of new shelling in areas near the site. The plant is controlled by Moscow but operated by Kiev. On Thursday, the UN chief, as well as the Turkish and Ukrainian presidents, discussed the situation at the plant amid fears of a nuclear disaster. Brazil's former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva keeps his lead over incumbent Jair Bolsonaro less than 2 months before presidential elections there. According to a new poll, leftist Lula da Silva has a 47% support among likely voters. For right-wing Bolsonaro, the support is 32%. That is up by 3% compared with a poll last month, but there is still a 15-point gap between the two rivals. On Tuesday, officially launched their campaigns for what is believed to be the most polarized presidential elections in Brazil so far. Elections will be held on October 2nd, and the runoff will follow if none of them garner more than 50% of the vote in the first round. Recent elections in South American countries, including Chile and Colombia, show voters have lurched to left-wing candidates. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Sao Paulo, Camila Escalante, to get more on the recent poll in Brazil.
Lula da Silva currently has more support than all of the other candidates combined, which means he could potentially win, based on these numbers, in the first round without need for a second round runoff election. And of course, the reason why he wasn't able to participate in the 2018 elections was because in the spring of that year, he was targeted in a lawfare campaign, and he was charged with a lot of bogus, made-up charges that landed him in jail in Curitiba, Paraná, a state to the south of Sao Paulo, where thousands of people rallied outside of that prison demanding his release. He remained in prison throughout the campaign, and ultimately, Jair Bolsonaro ran against a less popular leftist candidate, Fernando Haddad, and that leftist candidate lost. But there was overwhelming support during that election for Lula da Silva as well. And so, you know, that prevented the left from returning to power in those previous elections. And Lula remains just as popular now. A lot of the people who supported Bolsonaro in 2018 no longer support him because of how detrimental his neoliberal policies have been for the economies of regular Brazilian people here who have seen their material conditions slide down and deteriorate.
North Korea rejects an offer by its southern neighbor to help boost North's economy in exchange for nuclear disarmament. Kim Yo-jong, the sister of the North Korean leader, said the South Korean president should, quote, shut his mouth. She called Seoul's offer ignorant, at the height of folly, far from realization. Yo-jong said the idea of exchanging Pyongyang's nuclear power with economic cooperation is just a dream of Seoul. South Korea has expressed regret over its neighbor's pledge to continue nuclear development. The South's President Yoon Suk-yeol made the offer on Wednesday, also calling for talks with Pyongyang. The North says its nuclear program is for self-defense. Our correspondent in Seoul, Jennifer Chang, joined us earlier to tell us more about the tensions on the Korean Peninsula.
North Korea is extremely angry because the South is about to hold large-scale military drills in the field with the U.S. for the first time since 2017. And from the 16th to the 19th this week, it has been holding preliminary exercises with the U.S. in the field in preparation for those large-scale drills, which will run from August 22nd to September 1st this year. And they have been sending self-propelled howitzers out into the field. And at the same time, they are making this type of offer to North Korea, which does not even go as far as the offer made by U.S. President Trump to the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un during the summits, the historic summits held for the first time between the U.S. and the North, which of course fell apart over differences between how much the North was willing to denuclearize and how much the Trump administration was willing to lift sanctions and offer security guarantees.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A Saudi student at Leeds University in England who had returned home to the kingdom for a holiday has been sentenced to 34 years in prison for having a Twitter account and for following and retweeting dissidents and activists. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Stephanie Kirchgassner and Robin Winter. The piece is titled Saudi Woman Given 34-Year Prison Sentence for Using Twitter. A Saudi student at Leeds University in England who had returned home to the kingdom for a holiday has been sentenced to 34 years in prison for having a Twitter account and for following and retweeting dissidents and activists. The sentencing by Saudi Arabia's Special Terrorist Court was handed down weeks after the US President Joe Biden's visit to Saudi Arabia, which human rights activists had warned could embolden the kingdom to escalate its crackdown on dissidents and other pro-democracy activists. The case also marks the latest example of how the Saudi Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, has targeted Twitter users in his campaign of repression, while simultaneously controlling a major indirect stake in the U.S. social media company through Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund, the Public Investment Fund, PIF. Salma al-Shahab, a 34-year-old, a mother of two young children, was initially sentenced to serve 3 years in prison for the crime of using an internet website to cause public unrest and destabilize civil and national security in Saudi Arabia. But an appeals court on Monday handed down the new sentence, 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban, after a public prosecutor asked the court to consider other alleged crimes. According to a translation of the court records, which were seen by The Guardian, the new charges include the allegation that Salma al-Shahab was assisting those who seek to cause public unrest and destabilize civil and national security by following their Twitter accounts and by retweeting their tweets. It is believed that Salma al-Shahab may still be able to seek a new appeal in the case. By all accounts, Salma al-Shahab was not a leading or especially vocal Saudi activist, either inside the kingdom or in the United Kingdom. She described herself on Instagram, where she had 159 followers, as a dental hygienist, a medical educator, a PhD student at Leeds University, and lecturer at Princess Noura bint Abdul Rahman University, and as a wife and a mother to her sons Noah and Adam. Her Twitter profile showed she had 2,597 followers. Among tweets about COVID burnout and pictures of her young children, Salma al-Shahab sometimes retweeted tweets by Saudi dissidents living in exile, which called for the release of political prisoners in Saudi Arabia. She seemed to support the case of Lujain al-Hathloul, a prominent Saudi feminist activist who was previously imprisoned, is alleged to have been tortured for supporting driving rights for women in Saudi Arabia and is now living under a travel ban. One person who knew Salma al-Shahab said she could not stomach injustice. She was described as well-educated and an avid reader who had arrived in the United Kingdom in 2018 or 2019, to pursue her PhD at Leeds University. She had returned home to Saudi Arabia in December of 2020 on a holiday and had intended to bring her two young children and husband back to the United Kingdom with her. She was then called in for questioning by Saudi authorities and eventually arrested and tried for her tweets. A person who followed her case said Salma al-Shahab had at times been held in solitary confinement and had sought during her trial to privately tell the judge something about how she had been handled, which she did not want to state in front of her father. She was not permitted to communicate the message to the judge, the person said. The appeal's verdict was signed by three judges, but the signatures were illegible. Twitter, meanwhile, declined to comment on the case and did not respond to specific questions about what, if any, influence Saudi Arabia has over the company. Twitter previously did not respond to questions by The Guardian about why a senior aide to Prince Mohammed bin Salman, Badr al-Assakr, has been allowed to keep a verified Twitter account with more than 2 million followers, despite U.S. government allegations that he orchestrated an illegal infiltration of the company which led anonymous Twitter users to be identified and jailed by the Saudi government. One former Twitter employee has been convicted by a US court of law in connection to the case. One of Twitter's biggest investors is the Saudi billionaire Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, who owns more than 5% of Twitter through his investment company, Kingdom Holdings. While Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal still serves as chairman of the company, his control over the group faced questions in the United States media, including the Wall Street Journal, after it emerged that the Saudi royal, a cousin of the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, had been held captive at the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh for 83 days. The incident was part of a broader purge led by Prince Mohammed bin Salman against other members of the Saudi royal family and top businessmen, and involved allegations of torture, coercion, and expropriation of billions in assets into Saudi coffers. In a 2018 Bloomberg interview, Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, which was conducted in Riyadh 7 weeks after his release, the billionaire acknowledged he had reached a confirmed understanding with the Saudi government, apparently in connection to his release, which was confidential. More recently, Kingdom Holding announced in May that it had sold about 17% of its company to the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, where Prince Mohammed bin Salman serves as the chairman, for $1.5 billion. That, in turn, makes the Saudi government a significant indirect investor in Twitter. According to Twitter, investors do not play a role in managing the company's day-to-day business. The European Saudi Organization for Human Rights condemned Salma al-Shahab's sentence, which it said was the longest prison sentence to ever be brought against any activist in Saudi Arabia. It noted that many female activists have been subjected to unfair trials that have led to arbitrary sentences and have been subjected to severe torture, including sexual harassment in Saudi Arabia. Khalid al-Jabri, a Saudi who is living in exile and whose sister and brother are being held in the kingdom, said the Salma al-Shahab case proved Saudi Arabia's view that dissent equates to terrorism. Salma's draconian sentencing in a terrorism court over peaceful tweets is the latest manifestation of Mohammed bin Salman's ruthless repression machine, he said, referring to the Saudi Crown Prince. Just like journalist Jamal Khashoggi's assassination, her sentencing is intended to send shockwaves inside and outside of the kingdom. Dare to criticize Mohammed bin Salman and you will end up dismembered or in a Saudi prison. While the case has not received widespread attention, the Washington Post on Tuesday published a scathing editorial about Saudi Arabia's treatment of the Leeds University student and said her case showed that commitments the president had received on reform were a farce. At the very least, President Biden must now speak out forcefully and demand that Salma al-Shahab be released and allowed to return to her sons, both a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, in the United Kingdom, and to resume her studies at Leeds University.
السلام على يا أبا عبد الله.
وإنما خرجت لطلب الإصلاح في أمة جدي صلى الله عليه وآله.
The words of Imam al-Hussein عليه السلام in dialogue.
صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the son of the Lady of Light, the esteemed Fatima, the son of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the grandson of the esteemed and honorable Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the beacon of light which guides towards salvation and prosperity. The one who addresses Allah on the day of Ashura, saying, "In so many difficulties and sorrows, I have unburdened myself upon you and brought my grievances before you, O Allah. This is because I lean on you and I am inclined towards you. I tend towards no other." Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his words. Imam al-Husayn's words to Ibn Ziyad. "Any person who prefers the satisfaction of the created, the people, over that of the Creator, Allah, they will never reach felicity. He does not deserve my reply, for it has been proven that he shall be chastised by Allah."
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائي عليك.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of Ziyara al-Nahiya al-Muqaddasa. Stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala al-Husayn alladhi samihat nafsuhu bimuhjatih.
Peace be upon al-Husayn, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
As-salamu ala man ata'a Allah fi sirrihi wa alaniyatihi.
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
As-salamu ala man ja'ala Allah shifa'a fi turbatihi.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
As-salamu ala man al-ijabatu tahta qubbatihi.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
As-salamu ala man al-a'immatu min dhurriyatihi.
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the imams after him.
As-salamu ala ibn khatim al-anbiya. As-salamu ala ibn sayyid al-awsiya.
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
As-salamu ala ibn Fatimah al-Zahra. As-salamu ala ibn Khadijah al-Kubra.
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadijah, the great.
السلام على ابن سدرة المنتهى السلام على ابن جنة المأوى السلام على ابن زمزم والصفا.
Peace be upon the son of the low tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
السلام على المرمل بالدماء السلام على المهتوك الخبا السلام على خامس أصحاب أهل الكسايا.
Peace be upon him who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa binastayin. Assalamu alaykum wa abdillah. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is an episode of the program Dialogue, and I'm Dr. Fakhr Rouhani, explaining to you some aspects of the discourses of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. When Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was in Karbala, in answer to a letter that he had received from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, who had been the Umayyad governor of al-Kufa, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated to him that those people who prefer the wishes and whims of people over the desires and expectations of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, those people would never reach felicity. It indicates that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to guide everybody to the right path. Regarding those people who had joined Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam right from Medina and then from Mecca, or on the way from Mecca to Karbala, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to strengthen their religious beliefs. And regarding those people who never belonged to his camp, to his side, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to direct them to the right path. And this redemptive nature of the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam should always be kept in view. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam wasn't the imam of initiating any war or any battle. Rather, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was the imam of peaceful trends, the imam of peacefulness, and the imam of redemption, and the imam of rescuing people from certain death and certain going astray. Then we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, in this connection, indicated it to the courier who brought a letter from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, that those people who prefer the whims and wishes of other people to those of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would never reach felicity. In this way, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated that Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, I mean himself as an individual, and collectively the Umayyad side wouldn't reach felicity. So we find that being felicitous counts very much in the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Assalamu alaykum wa abdullah. Thank you.
Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdillah.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always.
عليك مني
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sadorbat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Transferring critically endangered species within Europe to broaden the gene pool is more difficult with Britain outside of the European Union. According to the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums, before 31st of December 2020, an average year saw about 1,400 transfers between the United Kingdom and other European Union countries. But in 2021, there were just 56, and so far this year, there have been 84. We're prepared for you an article written by James Tapper. The piece is titled Brexit Threatening Endangered Species as Red Tape Hits Zoo Breeding Programs. Breeding programs designed to save critically endangered species are being jeopardized by Brexit, with zoos warning they are being prevented from transferring animals such as rhinoceroses and giraffes by red tape created by the UK's departure from the European Union. The Animal Health Regulation was passed in 2016, before the EU referendum, but came into force in April of 2021. British officials claim there have been no reports that the United Kingdom dissented from the regulation. Zoos' small populations mean it is essential that they swap animals for breeding programs to keep the gene pool as broad as possible. According to the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums, before 31st of December 2020, an average year saw about 1,400 transfers between the United Kingdom and other European Union countries. But in 2021, there were just 56 transfers, and so far this year, there have been 84 transfers. Nikki Needham, the British and Irish Association of Zoos Senior Manager for Animal Care and Conservation, said there were more than 400 European Endangered Species Programme, or EEPs, and British zoos and aquariums were involved in coordinating about 25% of these. She said, "These are safety net populations for threatened species," adding, Animal transfers between zoos and aquariums are carefully planned to maintain a healthy genetic population. One program to save the eastern black rhinoceroses, a critically endangered species, has 87 animals, of which about 39 are at British zoos. Nikki Needham said, "Losing this would jeopardize the viability of the population and stop reintroductions to East Africa." Nikki Needham, the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums Senior Manager for Animal Care and Conservation, said transfers have plunged for two main reasons. Since Brexit, a new European Union animal health regulation has come into force after being agreed in 2016. That created new controls on the import of animals and plants into the European Union, known as sanitary and phytosanitary checks. Many of those checks need to be carried out at border control posts, which are usually set up by private enterprises. A few exist at airports in the European Union, but so far there are none at French ports, creating an effective ban on the import of any large animal. Recently, the Observer revealed that farmers were considering taking the extraordinary step of building a border control post in Calais, and paying for it themselves so that breeders could export their pedigree cattle and sheep. The few animals that have been transferred successfully to European zoos have travelled in aeroplanes. One was Sammy, a Margay or tiger cat born at Sheldon Wildlife Trust in Devon in late 2020. Margays are native to Central and South America, but illegal hunting means they are now classified as threatened by International Union for Conservation of Nature. There are 45 in Europe, with only 6 breeding pairs, so after the age of 10 months, when margays leave their mothers, Sammy was scheduled to go to Berlin Zoo in Germany to pair with a female margay from France. Zach Showell, Sheldon Wildlife Trust's chief executive, said, "Prior to Brexit, this would not have been a problem. It would have taken a month or two to organise for the animal to get collected by a specialist transport company. This took 6 months." Zach Showell said, "When we're dealing with small populations, being able to move animals to set up new breeding pairs is incredibly important. Certain animals, like the black rhinoceros, if you don't breed them then, they stop cycling. Having individuals on their own or not in breeding situations hampers the ability to continue breeding these endangered species. Some zoos have not been so lucky, with transfers falling through or facing very long delays. Ramon the orangutan arrived in Munster Zoo in June of 2022 from Blackpool Zoo after a year of planning. His departure means Blackpool's zookeepers can import another male to join the group and hope for more baby orangutans. Zach Showell had to apply for separate animal health certificates for Sammy the Margay. He said, "Every time an animal is moved, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA, has to negotiate with the other country on what level of health screening and surveillance and everything else needs to be done for this animal to move." Zach Scholl said some countries want new certificates for each species, adding, "I've just been told I need to move some tamarins, New World monkeys, to Belgium. The health certificate for primates from the UK to Belgium does not exist. It's made the whole process incredibly complicated and so much more time intensive." Costs have also increased, because specialist transport companies are not able to drive their vehicles in Europe without approval. Zach Scholl said, "We're moving more animals via airplanes, which is more expensive, and we're talking small animals here. You can't fit a giraffe onto a plane." A DEFRA spokesperson said, "This shows the real harm, the bureaucratic approach the European Union has chosen to take on animal and plant health," claiming, "We're ready to continue to negotiate on this, where sensible, pragmatic compromises can lead to improvements for everyone." The spokesperson for the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs noted, "Meanwhile, we are working closely with the Animal and Plant Health Agency and the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums to identify priority exports where there are welfare concerns or implications to breeding programs," claiming, "All of the requests for health certificates for the exports of zoo animals have been successfully fast-tracked."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very blessed and beautiful hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about the virtue of the pilgrimage to the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. As you know, many, many hadiths have been narrated regarding the virtue of the ziyarat of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And, you know, a lot of times these hadiths have been collected by our scholars, our ulama, put together in a book. Many of these books have been printed and are available for reading. This is one of the hadiths which has often been narrated and in some of those books. This hadith has been narrated in the book Kamil al-Ziyarat, page 325, also Mustadrak al-Wasail, volume 10, page 252, and it is the 11,952nd hadith there. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that my father narrated the following regarding the virtue of the ziyarat and the pilgrimage to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He said that from the time when he was killed up to now, that place, meaning the place where he was killed, is not empty of an inhabitant. Either there is an angel there, or one of the genies there, or there is a wild animal there. There's something there. There's a being there. There's a living being there, always there, who is sending his salutation upon the Imam, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Then the Imam in continuation says, and that he says everything in this world is envious of the pilgrim to Imam Hussein's grave and seeks to come into contact with the pilgrim of Imam Hussein and hopes that by looking at the pilgrim to Imam Hussein's grave, some goodness will come to him, because that person, or by that pilgrim looking at that person, some goodness will come to the person. Because, why? Because that person actually saw the grave of Imam Hussein, right? He saw the grave of Imam Hussein. So, you know, everything in this universe, it hopes that by looking at that Zaire, that pilgrim, some of that blessing which that person has acquired by his pilgrimage will also secondarily and accidentally come to him. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtue of the pilgrimage to Imam Hussein and also how everything in this universe is envious of the pilgrim to Imam Hussein's grave, in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The study has revealed that he